Hi everyone, welcome back to Coffee and Crime with me, Colette.
And me, Izzy.
So, last week, the teaser that I gave for this episode was that it's like a solved crime, but not quite solved. So, I hope that you're excited and you're ready.
I definitely am excited.
There's a lot of information. It was a lot, so...
Might be a long one.
Yeah, probably.
But that's good, it'll be more fun.
Yeah, so if we try and limit this intro, so... I am doing the West Memphis 3. And after I researched this, I realised that there was a documentary on Netflix called West Memphis, which is 2.5 hours, so I did not watch it. But that is about these people, if you want to watch that. And there's also several HBO documentaries. I think there's three. So the West Memphis 3 are made up of Damien Eccles, Jesse Miss Kelly Jr. and Jason Baldwin, who were tried and convicted of murdering three boys. So it's like three boys murdering three boys.
Okay, they're all men. Oh, boys. They're actual boys.
Hang on. Miss Kelly was 17, Baldwin was 16, and Eccles was 18 when they were arrested.
Oh, I might have heard of this before.
I hope not.
Not in detail, but I might have looked at this. We'll see.
So all three of them were teenagers when they were tried in 1994.
Yeah.
And the prosecution tried to convince a jury that it was a satanic ritual killing, a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the trial, Damien Eccles was sentenced to death. Jesse Miss Kelly was given life imprisonment plus 2 20-year sentences.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason Baldwin was given life imprisonment. So, the victims are... Stephen Branch, who was born November 26th, 1984.
Wait, when did it happen?
1993.
Oh, so they were young.
Yeah, they were all eight, all three victims. So he was born the 26th of November 1984, and his father Stephen and mother Pamela divorced when he was young. So he lived with his mum and stepdad Terry Hobbs, but Terry... The stepdads come into it later, basically. So okay. He was last seen wearing blue jeans and a white t-shirt and riding a black and red bike. And mm-hmm. He's buried in Mount Zion Cemetery in Steele, Missouri. The next one is Christopher Byers, who was born June 23rd, 1984. And his mum, Melissa Defer, and Ricky Murray divorced when he was four. And then he was adopted by his stepdad, John Mark Byers.
Okay.
Which I think is, like... I just find that sweet when
that
like,
nice
they adopt
do,
them. And he was last seen wearing blue jeans, dark shoes, and a white long-sleeved shirt. And he's buried in Forest Hill Cemetery East in Memphis, Texas. Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay,
I can't read. And the last victim is Michael Moore, who was born on the 27th of July, 1984. So we're all born, like, within months of each other.
Yeah.
And he was the son of Todd and Dana Moore. And he was last seen wearing blue bottoms, blue Boy Scouts of America shirt, and an orange and blue Boy Scout hat, and he was riding a green bike. And he's buried in Crittenden Memorial Park Cemetery in Marion, Arkansas.
Wait, I don't know if this comes into it, but did the boys, like, know each other, the young ones?
Yeah, they were friends.
Oh, so were they together?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were.
Yeah.
Because they're always referred to as, like, the three of them, so... Because they were all killed together on the same day.
Yeah.
I keep reading because I put Arkansas. And it reminded me so much of the...
Is this
one Arkansas? And this
I am
one...
confused.
Yeah. So they were all killed on the 5th of May, 1993. And there's a memorial for them in Weaver Elementary School playground in West Memphis.
Is that where they went?
Yeah, that was where they were in second grade there.
Oh.
I know, which is year three for our...
That must be really hard to deal with, like, the trauma if they're your, like, peers when you're eight.
Exactly,
I think
eight
years old is enough to get it, that they got killed.
Yeah.
It's enough to understand, and it's probably, like, high-profile trial or
Yeah, true.
Case
and
or whatever. Three of them have gone.
Yeah. God. Oh, I can't even imagine. And that memorial was erected in 1994 and then it was refurbished in May 2013 for the 20th anniversary.
Oh, yeah.
I know, which So part of the thing that made me really sad is, so 1984, if they hadn't have been killed, they would have been what, like, math, maths, 34.
That's not even that old, and that's so long ago.
Exactly.
They might have, like, families of their own.
Yeah. So. Like, that's around the age you would start having kids.
Well, probably they might have their own 8-year-old.
Yeah.
This is going to be another sad one.
I know, I keep choosing these. I thought this was going to be a night, not lighthearted, but, like, not sad. So the killing occurred, on the 5th of May, 1993, Steve Branch, Michael Moore and Christopher Byers, all aged 8, were reported missing. So Christopher Byers is father.
Oh, okay, got it, yeah.
Father was the one that made the first report, and that was at 7 o'clock in the evening. And neighbours said they had last seen the three boys playing together at 6:30, and then Steve Branch's stepfather, Terry, I think it is, Terry, had called them to come home. And searches began. However, police searches were limited. I don't know why. And friends and neighbours visited the location where the bodies were later found.
Searching for them, they'd been there?
Yeah.
As in, were their bodies buried?
No.
What?
Yeah, that's what... This is a very strange case. Like, none of it seems to add up, really. Yeah. So then on the 6th of May at 8 a.m, Crittenden County search and rescue personnel began a more in-depth search, focusing mostly on Robin Hood Hills, which is in West Memphis, which was where they were last seen.
Yeah.
So what they did was they formed, like, a human chain. You've probably seen it in, like, TV shows and stuff, where you, like, all link arms, and then you just walk forward.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because obviously one of you's gonna see it in the... Because then you're not going to, like, miss a spot.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
So it's, like, completely combing an area, because then you know for a fact that they're not there. It's not like...
Well, there's no bits missed.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So they did not find any evidence of the boys there.
In the place where they were found?
No, this is just in Robin Hood Hills when they did the search. Sorry. That's okay, separate search. So then at 1:45 p.m. on the 6th of May... Steve Jones, who was the juvenile parole officer, he found a boy's black shoe in a muddy creek leading to a drainage canal in Robin Hood Hills where they'd searched. And then that's where the boy's bodies were found, in a ditch. So, like, a drainage canal.
Oh,
the bodies were naked and hog-tied.
Oh, gee, is that when you're on your, like, your stomach with them behind you? What?
Your left ankle is tied to your left wrist, and your right ankle is tied to your right wrist. And
so you're all, like, the way up.
Yeah. And their clothes. I know. I don't know if it actually, like, whether it was before or after they died. I'm not sure. But their clothes were found in the creek, and they were, like...
Wait, were they naked?
Yeah. So they must have been hog...
Oh, you must take hog-tied. Their clothes off first.
Yeah.
But that still could have been after that.
Yeah, true. But that's going to be hard to undress someone that's dead.
But if they're only 8, they're only little.
True.
And if there's 3 of them, they can hold them up and take the clothes.
Either way, horrible.
Yeah.
So the clothing was mostly inside out, and only one pair of underwear was ever found. Yeah, so I don't know if that was, like, whether it just blew away.
Yeah, true, and they're, like, going to be small, aren't they?
Yeah, but then it wouldn't have blown far in a day, surely, unless it was, like, insanely windy. Also, it's in a creek bed where it's, like, muddy, so it's probably stuck. Yeah, and the rest of the clothing was wrapped around sticks, but from the article, I couldn't tell if it was, like, was put there, or if it just, like, snagged. But it sounded like it was put there intentionally.
Yeah, wrapped around sounds a bit more like you've actually done the action rather than it's just blown onto it and got caught.
Exactly. So Christopher Byers had been mutilated.
Oh. Post, like, murder?
Is yeah, I'm pretty sure it was because... oh, it says, forensic pathologist Frank J. Peretti determined that Byers had died of multiple injuries. So, he'd been slashed quite a few times with, like, a knife. So he died of that, whilst Moran Branch died of multiple injuries and drowning. So whether Byers had, like, already died by the point that they were drowned, oh, horrible.
I know this is such an obvious thing to say, but how, like, awful to be the one to find the bodies as well.
Yeah.
Because
have you ever
like
erased
that?
Yeah, have you ever?
If it's mutilated, that's disgusting. Yeah. And it's like their little body, like.
Exactly. Have you ever get that out of your mind?
I think it's because they were actively searching for it.
Yeah.
But if you come across it.
Yeah, that's even worse.
How traumatic.
Wait, no,
it'd
he was.
Scary as well.
I don't think he was found. Oh, wait, maybe he did. But he was a juvenile parole officer, the guy that found them as well. So then you're constantly dealing with children. How do you...
Yeah, yeah.
Like... Oh,
separate
I just,
that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I can't.
Compartmentalise, like, that horrible thing.
So it was originally thought that they had been sexually assaulted. But this has been disputed by expert testimonies.
Mm-hmm.
But it's strange because trace sperm DNA was found on trousers recovered from the scene.
Like, just saying, I don't know where this whole thing goes, but it doesn't, like, he might not have sexually assaulted him, he might have got off on the murder.
Yeah.
And then, like, actions going here, like, done it himself.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just thinking of reason.
Yeah. Prosecution experts believe that Byers had suffered from a knife attack and had been intentionally castrated. Whereas the defence claimed that these were animal attacks post-mortem. So basically, oh, like, the body had been left there. Which, it seems a bit coincidental for it to be, like, castrated by an animal. That seems
yeah,
like...
Yeah, that is...
But then, really... why was he the only one that was... Like, why weren't the other two...
Yeah. I think that's a bit of a stretch for an animal to do that.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that it is one thing or another, it's just...
Yeah, no, I'm just saying from their point of view, but obviously they have to do anything to defend.
Yeah, but police believe the attacks occurred at the ditch, whilst critics believe that none of it, or at least not the assault, happened there.
I've just thought of something. You know in How to Get Away with Murder?
Yes.
Isn't... I watched this episode a little while ago, but when they're... Sorry, keep your ears shut if you don't want spoilers.
But
it's only
season one.
Yeah, only season one. But when they find her, they argue...
Who?
The body of the...
Lila.
Yeah.
Look, that's not her name.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, Lila Stangard.
Is it this or is it Suits? Because I...
No, it can't have been Suits. She
but
has
bugs. But then they argue that it's bugs, and don't they say you can pay... You can pay people to say... What you want them to say.
Oh, really?
I'm sure they say that. Like,
because they think it's nail markings, but then...
I don't know if that's, like... But it doesn't seem dramatised. It's, like, it seems genuine that you can actually...
Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me.
But then, I don't know. That you can pay medical experts to investigate... Like, investigate it, and then they'll say, kind of go with what you want them to do. I don't know. I can't remember. Anyway, that's... You know, got to consider that.
So... Critics believe that none of it, or at least not the assault, happened there, which would kind of explain why there was, like, semen on some of their trousers.
Yeah.
So, Byers had been prescribed Ritalin because he suffered from ADHD in January 1993, but they found carbamazepine in his system, which is used for epilepsy and nerve pain. And the amount that he had was to a sub-therapeutic level.
What does that mean?
Like below therapeutic level, I think. He wasn't given enough for it to be a therapeutic level, so because it's used for nerve pain, if you had nerve pain, he hadn't taken enough to, like, ease
that pain. Oh, so not very much of it.
Yeah, so it wouldn't make sense. It's not like he took it because he had a prescription, basically, so...
That's weird, though, because you'd always think they would give you more.
Yeah, exactly.
To try and hurt you or whatever.
So Mark Byers, which was his dad, said that Christopher may not have taken his prescription on the 5th of May 1993 for the Ritalin.
Okay.
But then I don't see how that's relevant. Like,
yeah, no idea.
Does it make a difference? I don't... Maybe it does, but... So the suspects, the main three suspects are Jesse Miss Kelly, Jason Baldwin, and Damien Eccles. Mm. So Miss Kelly was 17, Baldwin was 16, and Eccles was 18.
Miss Kelly?
Yeah. I think I'm saying it right. It's M-I-S-S-K-E-L-L-E-Y. Miss Kelly.
Oh, is one word.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were saying, like, first name Miss, last name Kelly. I was like, what?
No, right. Jesse Miss Kelly.
Oh, okay, got it.
They were 17, 16, and 18 when they were first arrested. Baldwin had previously been arrested for vandalism, and Eccles had previously been arrested for shoplifting.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Kelly was known for having a short fuse.
Okay.
Great. And he.
Good combo.
Yeah, which led to fist fights with, like, classmates while he was at school. So he was a bit. Had, like, violent tendencies. So Miss Kelly and Eccles were both high school dropouts. But this is quite strange, like, contrast so much, but Baldwin seemed to do well. Like, a lot of his teachers seemed to say complimentary things, and they actually encouraged him to do graphics at college.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, get a degree in it.
Okay,
cool. This is in America.
Yeah.
So Eccles and Baldwin were friends, and they bonded over music, fiction, and their dislike for West Memphis culture. Particularly the Bible Belt, which I googled. Basically, everyone was super religious.
Oh, in like an area.
Yeah. So it's like the belt because it's like a line of. Really, or like a ring, I guess, of really
religious
people.
So is this why they're called satanic? Because they don't like Christianity.
Yeah, I guess. So, yeah, they didn't like the Bible Belt. So both of them knew Miss Kelly, but they weren't friends with him.
Mm.
Eccles rarely attended school and would often receive visits from social workers, like, as a result.
Oh, yeah.
Which led to him and his girlfriend breaking into a trailer in a rainstorm. And then Eccles was charged with burglary.
Okay, how did that lead to that?
Yeah, exactly, I was very confused. I was confused by the whole thing. She wasn't charged with anything, but why was he charged with burglary? It didn't say that he'd stolen anything, so I was like, surely it's just like breaking and entering. I don't know. So he was sent to a mental health facility in Arkansas, for several months, which led to... he got a full disability status from the Social Security Administration. At Eccles' trial, Dr. George W. Woods testified for the defence that Eccles suffered from, this is a quote, grandiose and persecutory delusions, auditory and visual hallucinations, which I've spelt hallucinations. Great.
I had some bad spelling.
Disordered thought processes, substantial lack of insight, and chronic incapacitating mood swings. So, like, that's end quote, by the way.
Yeah, he went, so, like, yeah, at the end.
So he's got some, like, mental health issues, like, quite severe mental health issues. And before the, because... there was a death penalty hearing. And before that, his psychologist said that months before the murders, Eccles had claimed he got superpowers when he drank human blood.
Oh, my.
Yeah, okay. Which grosses me out. Like,
wait, did he try it?
I guess he must
have. I mean, on them?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. good, because that's gross.
But I think that was, like, partly why they thought it was, like, a satanic thing. Because obviously if you hear in the news that he thinks he gets superpowers if he drinks human blood, you would be like, oh, it's a sacrifice to get more blood. Like,
yeah.
That makes sense.
To get powerful.
Yeah.
Weird. Anyway.
So, at the time of his arrest, he was working part-time at a roofing company and expecting a child with his girlfriend, Domini?
Wait, talking about the whole blood getting superpowers thing, have you seen the murderer who was, like, in his 20s or 30s, and he had a girlfriend who was, like, 13 or something, like a teenager, 14 maybe, and he was convinced he was a 300-year-old werewolf?
I think
so. So they killed her parents.
Oh, that...
Because she didn't want them to be...
Yeah, I've seen, like, there's someone known as, like, the Vampire of Dusseldorf.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Who used to drink blood. There's another woman who used to bathe in blood because she thought it kept her young.
I might have seen this as well.
There's some
On Vice, I saw, like, these people who drink each other's blood or something.
Yeah, but that's, like, consensual, so I
That's different, yeah, stealing.
I mean, still weird, in my opinion. Sorry if you... I don't even like the taste of, like... My mouth is bleeding.
To think you get powers from it, though...
Yeah, true. That's
even... I think they just did it because they enjoyed it.
I think that's a bit, like... I mean, it says that he was delusional, basically.
Well, yeah.
Grandiose and persecutory delusions. So, like, clearly...
Yeah, definitely delusional.
So, some more suspects. There's, like, the three of them were, like, all together suspects. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Chris Morgan and Brian Holland. This doesn't really say, like... We don't really have any background to them.
Yeah.
But they both had prior drug offences. And 4 days after the bodies were discovered, they left for Oceanside, California. Mm. Which, like, always looks suspicious. But then it's difficult, because it's like, if you're innocent, you're just moving. Like, to you, it doesn't seem suspicious. And if you don't know you're a suspect, obviously...
Well, you're not going to be thinking about that.
Yeah. So it was believed that Chris Morgan knew the boys... Because he used to drive an ice cream truck to the neighbourhood.
Mad links coming
up. I know.
If you want more on ice cream trucks, go look at our last episode on...
The Iceman.
Yeah.
We seem to have had 3 episodes that are, like, all linked in a row.
Yeah, it's like a chain. This is crazy.
We have to choose a good one next week.
Mm. It'll be my choice to try and link this. We'll have to work hard. Okay.
This is what our show is going to morph into.
What I'm researching already for the next episode has some links to, like, satanic cults.
Oh, perfect.
Sort of. So this is so seamless.
I know.
Okay, carry on through.
So it's believed that he'd known them, but not very well. So, like, he might have just seen them, or they might have bought ice cream from him, but obviously that's not, like, a relationship.
No.
And they were both arrested on the 17th of May, 1993, in Oceanside, California. And they took polygraph tests, which were administered by California police. But both tests showed that they were lying when they said they had no involvement in the deaths.
Oh.
But
polygraph tests aren't considered...
Yeah, they're not admissible, really, most of the time. And as well... Chris Morgan had claimed he had a long history of drug and alcohol abuse, which led to blackouts and memory lapses. But apparently if you're on drugs and you take a polygraph test, it can affect the results.
Oh, I see.
Because you don't know that you're lying, really.
Like, yeah.
I don't know, you're in, like, a warped
reality. Yeah, because it can't test whether it's actually true, can it?
Exactly.
If you think it's true, so...
Exactly. But then also, if he had blackouts and memory lapses, he might not remember.
Yeah, he could have been.
Yeah, so he said that he, quote, might have killed them.
Oh.
End quote. But recanted this later, obviously.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to leave that, like, in the world. So blood and urine samples were taken from both men and sent to the West Memphis PD, which I'm just going to be calling the West Memphis PD.
What? Thanks for that explanation.
I was going to say WMPD, but that's just as difficult to say. So, I put the wrong version of there. After their arrest...
I can accept that, that's okay.
After their arrest, there's no evidence that they remain suspect. Yeah. So basically, like, it's so weird. They were basically arrested, and then blood and urine samples were taken, and then I don't know what happened after that, and no one really knows what happened after that.
So you don't even know if they were released?
No, they were released.
Oh.
But the recanted part where he said he might have killed them was eventually barred from admission as evidence.
Because
I think that they wanted to use it in the trial of the other three.
Yeah.
The West Memphis three. Because obviously, if someone else has said that he might have killed them.
Well, wouldn't that have been enough to show reasonable doubt?
Yeah, exactly. So it was barred from
that
being
admissible. That must be so annoying for the lawyer who knows it's out there.
And he just
and that could probably get the whole case thrown out. Oh, frustrating.
So the final suspect is Mr. Bojangles, which I started reading this and I was like, this is definitely just racism.
Okay, great.
But then I don't know, probably is mostly still racism, but he was an unknown black male and he was like brought up during Miss Kelly's trial, so like that was when he was first mentioned.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's okay. So workers in a West Memphis Bojangles, which is a restaurant.
Oh, okay.
Saw a quote mentally disoriented end quote black man inside the ladies' bathroom of the restaurant at 8:42 on the 5th of May, which was the day that the boys went missing.
That is quite a weird thing.
And the restaurant was a mile away from the Robin Hood Hills' crime scene.
Mm.
Yeah. And he was bleeding and brushed against the bathroom walls.
Oh, shit.
But then this is another thing I find strange. So the officer that took the report from the manager of the restaurant is called Regina Meeks. But she took the restaurant manager's statement through the drive-through window.
What the hell? Why?
I know. I was so confused.
How did that?
Yeah. Well, she, like, drive up? I was so confused. It was very strange. I was like,
is this fate? That's such a weird thing to do.
Yeah. But at that point, Mr. Bojangles had left and the police didn't look at the bathroom that day.
Okay.
Don't know why.
Yeah.
So the following day, the victims' bodies were discovered. I guess that's why they didn't look, because they didn't know that they were dead. They just thought they were missing.
Oh, yeah. Wait, so is his... So his name's not Mr.
Bojangles.
Because when you first said it, I thought that was... I was like, that's a weird name.
Yeah, no.
But, so they haven't identified him?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I guess... They hadn't discovered the bodies, so it's not like they were investigating it for murder.
Yeah.
But then also, it's
probably
still...
should have just followed it up.
Yeah, because it...
But maybe they don't have the resources to do that if they don't know
true,
it's
true, but still, if there's like a disoriented man covered in blood in the woman's bathroom...
Yeah.
I don't know.
They said it's... bleeding, but they might have thought he was bleeding because he was in other people's blood.
Yeah. So, the following day, the manager reported it to the police... thinking that Mr. Bojangles may have done it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that led police to investigate the bathroom and they took blood samples from the walls and tiles.
Oh, they did manage.
So they did, yeah. Oh. So it was lucky.
I thought you were going to say because they waited so long, like they got cleaned.
So annoying. Yeah, that's what I... No, I don't know. The manager also gave them a pair of sunglasses they believed the man had left behind.
Oh, yeah.
But Bryn Ridge... who comes up multiple times in this story, who was the police detective, testified that he later lost those blood scrapings.
What? You have one piece of evidence. Yeah. Because that, like, those sunglasses might not have been his.
Yeah.
You have one sort of piece of evidence.
Oh, also, what are you going to get from the sunglasses?
They're still on.
Like, you can't get DNA from sun.
You probably could. Skin?
Yeah, but...
Yeah, it would be a push. The blood is a lot more useful. That is just dumb. Wait, did he just get... Was that just fine?
I don't know. He comes up multiple times.
I lost a key piece of evidence. Oh, sorry.
Well, I guess they thought that he... Basically, what it feels like to me is that...
Well, he lost it on purpose.
No.
Oh.
I don't think that. I think that very quickly they decided that the three, like Miss Kelly, Baldwin and Eccles, were guilty.
Yeah.
So they didn't bother fully pursuing other leads.
I've watched, in my opinion, too many documentaries where the lead policemen are just like, well, they, like, stupid Burns and Ruffet, that policeman is like, well, actually, I have it, like, yeah. I know that they read, what was it, like, Nietzsche, however you say it?
Yeah.
And he talks about, like, superiority, so yeah. They must have done it. Like, what? Like, so many people have probably read that. They were university students studying. Like, what the hell are you... It's just, like, trying desperately to pin it on them.
Cause, yeah.
I guess to save their reputation as well, because they've made this call.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just annoying.
But then I've seen a lot of police officers say that sometimes you have a gut feeling. Like, there's a show I watch called Real Detectives.
Mm.
And some of them say that sometimes you know that they did it, like... You just feel it in you, like you've been a detective for like 30 years.
That's not enough. Like...
Well, no, I know, but then sometimes what ends up happening is they end up pursuing it and it does turn out to be them.
Yeah.
But they have like gone about it in the wrong, obviously.
Yeah.
Because they're like so determined because...
But that's not professional.
Well, so, I know, but sometimes they said they'll like speak to say the husband of a wife that was murdered. And like they know it's the husband because he's being really smug and like... annoying, but obviously you can't, you have to find evidence, so then they won't pursue other leads because they're focused on him, but then is him.
That's not fair though.
I know, but then it's difficult because it's like... I know
it's difficult if you're sure, but...
And as well, if you're a policeman, like, you know what you're looking for.
I know, but you're... I feel like it's acting like you're above the rules. Like, the rules are the rules, you have to investigate other things in case you're wrong.
True.
You're not, like, super... I don't know, it just annoys me when they're... It makes their case less believable, though, if they're trying so hard to pin it on someone. Yeah. Whether it was them or not, like...
But a hair that belonged to... So, like, they did DNA testing.
Mm.
It belonged to a black male, and it was found on a sheet which was wrapped around one of the victims.
Oh.
But then...
There are probably...
Later on, I'll talk about some of the stuff that was, like, dealt with badly. Mm. And the crime scene was a bit... not handled very well. So, it might not have been the murderer, like...
Also, there's probably more than one black man.
Yeah.
It could have been.
Well, yeah, this is just... They just know it belongs to a black man, but...
Yeah, exactly.
It could have been... I mean, it might not have been, because obviously they know who did the autopsy, but, for example, it could have been a police officer that just happened to walk past.
That's true.
It's very strange. So the investigation was led by James Sudbury and Steve Jones,
mm-hmm.
who were both police officers.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt that it had, like, cult overtones. Therefore, Eccles, who they knew had interests in occultism, might be a suspect. Which, right, not gonna lie, is someone that has an interest in true crime.
No, it's not the same interest, though.
True.
So many people have... when they say interest, like, interest in cults probably means interest in joining.
Yeah, true.
And cult activity. God, imagine joining a cult. Why?
I know. Because good marketing. Why do people join pyramid schemes? Good question.
That's persuasive.
Yeah, but so cults. So Steve Jones felt that Eccles was capable of murdering children.
Mm.
Wait, hang on. I just need to check something. Steve Jones was the one that found the shoe. So why have I put that he's a parole officer and then elsewhere I put that he's a police officer?
Both.
Steve Jones was, like, a parole officer.
Mm-hmm.
So Eccles was interviewed on the 7th of May... and given a polygraph test, during which he, guess what he did? denied involvement, obviously. Mm. But the chart indicated he was lying.
Ooh.
And then on the 9th of May, Detective Bryn Ridge, the guy who lost the blood, that's what I'm going to call him this whole time.
Okay, oh, right, yeah.
Conducted a formal interview during which Eccles said that one victim had genital wounds, which was incriminating. Because,
yeah.
Yeah.
What? How did he get him to say that? And, like, in what context would you say that without realising you're incriminating yourself?
I don't know.
Oh, well.
A month after the bodies were discovered, Eccles was still the most heavily interrogated suspect, but the police said he wasn't a suspect, just a source of information.
Okay.
On the 3rd of June, Miss Kelly was interrogated. even though he supposedly had an IQ of 72. Yeah. Which makes you a borderline intellectual functioning person, according to, like, this isn't what I've named him. This is, like,
yeah.
Medically, he's borderline intellectual functioning.
Wait, what? As in he's...
He's borderline having any intellectual function.
So he's not even having any... He's only bordering maybe having any function.
And also he was a minor. So despite that really low IQ and the fact he's a minor, he was interrogated alone for 12 hours.
12? I feel like you can... Like, a vulnerable person like that, you could break them.
Exactly. Loads of people were comparing it to... I don't know if you've seen Making a Murderer... But Brendan Dassey and that has a really low IQ, and he was a minor, and he was interrogated for.
That's unfair techniques, though.
But only 46 minutes of the interrogation was recorded, and that was as two separate sections. So it's not even 46 minutes. It's like two separate, yeah.
If you are a police officer, why would you do that? Because that's not going to hold up.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't. It's just wrong for that to hold
up. Yeah. If you're going to do a 12-hour interrogation, record the whole thing.
Otherwise, it's just a waste of time.
Yeah. And energy.
Because anything could have been said.
Exactly.
Yeah, energy. You've just sat in a room for 12 hours with a suspect. For nothing. Just to, like, oh, I didn't know. Yeah. It was so dumb.
But when I was, like, researching this, I was feeling very conflicted. Because I was, like, when I was reading about why they were suspects, I was, like, yeah, I definitely. Like, the fact that he knew about the genital...
Yeah.
Wounding. I was like, 100% they did it, but then I was reading stuff, and then I was like, oh, I don't know anymore.
He could have just said that, and it happened to be right.
Yeah, but that's saying that only one of them had that.
Oh, did he?
It's okay, like, too specific.
Yeah, that is really specific.
Unless they found the bodies earlier, but then why wouldn't you report? I don't.
Because that might... They might have worried about incriminating themselves.
But then why would you mention it then? Oh, it's... I don't know. It's very
it's weird.
So Miss Kelly recanted his interrogation, claiming intimidation, coercion, fatigue, and veiled threats from the police.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he was afraid of the police, like, during the confession. And he also claimed he didn't fully understand his Miranda rights. So I had to Google this. Miranda rights are the right to remain silent.
Oh, okay.
So he claimed that he didn't fully understand that he had a right to remain silent.
They're supposed to tell you, aren't they?
Yeah.
I thought it was... I thought they... I swear I heard that somewhere. They have to tell you.
Yeah, they did tell him.
Or they can't use... Oh, they did tell him, okay.
But you have to understand, and he said he didn't understand... But if you don't understand, you're supposed to not be interrogated alone.
Okay.
But it went to the Supreme Court in Arkansas in 1996, and they ruled that he did understand and that he'd given it voluntarily, like the statement.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, like, it was admissible or whatever. So part of his statement, Miss Kelly's statement, was leaked to reporters... and appeared on the front page of the Memphis Commercial Appeal before the trial.
Okay,
which
great.
Reporters aren't supposed to do that because...
Wait, is there a jury?
Yes.
That's not allowed?
Yeah, because...
They're not allowed to consume any media.
Exactly, and I think it was the O.J. Simpson, like when I watched the People v. O.J. They had a really hard time choosing a jury because everyone knew about it. And then I can't remember if it was that or like which case it was, but one person actually ended up being tried in a completely different state because everyone knew, a different county or whatever. Yeah. It might have been making a murderer got tried in a different county.
Because it was so high profile.
So obviously not really supposed to do that. So Eccles and Baldwin were arrested after Miss Kelly's confession.
Mm-hmm.
And on February 17th, 1994, another statement was made by Miss Kelly. However, this time his lawyer, Dan Stidham, I'm going to say his name like that, was present and advised him to remain silent, which Miss Kelly ignored.
Oh.
So he said he didn't understand his Miranda rights.
But he was offered it and declined.
Yeah, so...
Or told.
Yeah. So he, in this second statement... he talked about how the boys were abused and murdered.
What?
Yeah.
Why did he make the statement?
Exactly.
He literally... When you say he made the statement, does that mean, like... It doesn't mean he just said it in the interview. Like, he properly went to make a statement.
It just says another statement was made. But I think it might have been in the interrogation.
Oh, okay.
But still...
Still, anyway.
Like, his lawyer is telling him not to answer.
And he goes, no, I will not do that. Instead, I will describe the case in detail.
So, Stidham, who is his lawyer, wrote a critique detailing the police errors and misconceptions during the investigative process,
mm-hmm.
which he discussed more in a May 2010 radio interview. So, a big part of the investigation... was this woman called Vicky Hutchison.
Yeah.
Who later recanted testimony due to claims of police coercion. So, on the 6th of May 1993, which was the day the bodies were found, but this was before the bodies were found, Detective Don Bray conducted a polygraph test on her in order to find out if she had stolen money from her employer. So, like, completely unrelated to the case. And her son was sat there, and he was so distracting that they couldn't do the test, which I was like, why would you bring your son along if you were...
Wait, how old was the son?
I can't remember.
Because she might not have had childcare.
But still, why would he be sat in the room?
Yeah, I know. They could have sat him outside for some... Well, might not have enough staff.
True. It just seems strange. Aaron, who was friends with the boys, they were like playmates.
Oh, her son, like the 8-year-old.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so he would have been 8.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he knew the, like, victims. And he told the detective, Don Bray, that they had been killed, quote, at the playhouse, end quote. Yeah.
What the hell?
It's so...
Wait. Out of the blue?
I guess. So the bodies were later discovered where Aaron showed them, but it wasn't... Right, let me just read this entire thing and then we can dissect.
Yeah.
So the bodies were later discovered where Aaron indicated, leading Aaron to claim he saw Satanists speaking Spanish commit the murders.
The 8-year-old said, I saw Satanists who were speaking Spanish.
Let me just check how old he was, because...
Well, it would be weird if he was, like, 16 playing with 8-year-olds. he must have been about that.
Yeah, I'm sure he was. So Aaron's statements were inconsistent, and he didn't pick Baldwin, Eccles, or Miss Kelly out of photo lineups. Although that seems kind of irrelevant, because if they didn't do it...
They're the teenagers.
Yeah.
Did he claim that he could see them then? Because he might not.
I guess. But then
that would be weird for them to do that in front of him.
Yeah, and that would be weird for the police to be like... Like, it seems like the police want it to be Baldwin, Eccles and Miss Kelly. But there was no playhouse at the area he showed police.
So all he said was...
They were killed at a playhouse.
There was three... Wait, did he say there was three people who killed the three?
No, he just said he saw Satanists.
He saw Satanists speaking Spanish kill the three boys.
Yeah.
And did, wait, he knew the three boys. Oh yeah, he said they were his friends. But he didn't...
But then that would make sense if he was playing with them. And then you hide because you see some strange men coming.
I don't know.
It's so confusing.
It just... most of what he said is...
It sounds stupid. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, if he was... If he had an IQ of 72, but yet he was speaking Spanish, unless the devil literally came through him to speak Spanish...
Yeah.
Which I don't think the police are going to use in court.
Yeah.
Oh, are they explaining that one?
I don't know. This entire thing is... Yeah, so there was no playhouse at the area that Aaron showed the police. And some of the information was leaked to the press, leading to more belief of a cult.
Great, yeah.
So on the 1st of June 1993, or thereabouts, Vicky Hutchison placed hidden microphones in her house.
Sorry, that's the kid's mum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In her house. Because she was having a conversation with Eccles after Miss Kelly agreed to introduce them.
What? After the kids died?
Yeah.
After the kids were killed?
She placed hidden microphones.
And she met with them?
Yeah.
Well, they were suspects.
Yeah, but they weren't technically suspects. I guess. I don't know.
Did they know they were suspects, like... Is this at the time?
I don't think so.
That's weird. Anyway,
yeah, this was after interviews, but she claimed that he didn't say anything incriminating, but the police said that the audio was unintelligible, so basically it got scrapped.
Yeah.
On the 2nd of June 1993, Hutchison claims that she, Eccles, and Miss Kelly attended a Wiccan meeting. I googled what Wiccans are.
Isn't that...
Like a pagan cult group thing.
Yeah. What? Why is she going with him? Her son... Sorry, her 8-year-old son...
Yeah.
...was friends with other 8-year-olds, and he's claiming he saw them murder.
Yeah.
And now she's going to cults. Oh, what the hell? Is she investigating?
Yeah, I think... Well, because she placed in microphones, so that was like...
She invited three teenagers... two teenagers who potentially killed 8-year-olds into her house where her 8-year-old lives. Sorry, what? Anyway, sorry.
That's
over.
Okay. So her, Eccles, and Miss Kelly apparently attended a Wiccan meeting in Terrell, Arkansas. And then apparently while they were at that meeting, Eccles bragged about the murders. You look so confused. On the 3rd of June 1993, Miss Kelly was first questioned. And that was the day after her confession about the Wiccan meeting. But she couldn't name the location nor participants of people at the meeting.
Oh.
Yeah. It's so weird. She was never charged for, like, stealing from her employer. And she claimed later that she implicated Eccles and Miss Kelly to avoid criminal charges for the crime she had committed. And claim the reward for discovering the murderers.
Great, not to keep the neighbourhood and her child safe.
Well, yeah, but if it wasn't them.
What? Say again.
Like, she claims that she implicated them.
Wait, she's claiming, like...
Later, that she faked
falsely.
It. Yeah.
Oh.
To discover the reward, because... Or to get the
reward. What she's saying, she made it up.
Yeah. Because she wanted the money.
Oh.
And to avoid criminal charges.
Okay.
Yeah. So the trials. Miss Kelly was tried separately because under the Bruton rule, his confession couldn't be used against his co-defendants. So the confession that he made, obviously they had to be tried separately. And they all pled not guilty, obviously. So Miss Kelly's trial. Dr. Richard Oefsch, who was a false confessions expert, testified that the interrogation was a classic example of police coercion. And the confessions that he made, so multiple confessions, are apparently inconsistent both with each other and with the crime itself. So Miss Kelly said that Eccles had raped one of the boys.
Mm.
However, there's no forensic evidence that anyone had raped them.
I'm a bit, why did he say that?
In a confession.
So he is confessing now, openly.
This was before the trial.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. He's just decided to go.
That was when he was telling them about it and his lawyer was like,
don't tell them. Why?
I don't know.
Okay.
But there's no forensic evidence showing that any of the boys had been raped. And then on the 5th of February 1994, Miss Kelly was convicted of one count of first degree and two counts of second degree murder, which gave him a sentence of life plus 40 years imprisonment.
Wow.
And he appealed, but the Arkansas Supreme Court upheld the conviction.
Mm.
Eccles and Baldwin were tried together, and Dale W. Griffiths, a graduate of Columbia Pacific University, which I googled, is an unaccredited school.
Oh.
Was called forward as an expert in the occult to prove that the murders were a satanic ritual. But he has That's a degree weird. From a unaccredited school.
Very weird, yeah.
So on the 19th of March 1994... Eccles and Baldwin were both found guilty on three counts of murder, with Eccles being sentenced to death and Baldwin to life imprisonment. Which I find weird as well, because they were tried together, why'd they get such different sentences? Anyway.
Mm.
Eccles had known details about the drowning and mutilations, which were too accurate, according to the prosecution, and were not public knowledge. However, Eccles claimed that Detective Ridge's account of this confession were false, and there's no recording available. I know.
I think if there's no recording, you shouldn't allow it.
Exactly.
There's literally no evidence. They can say whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, and a woman who I think wrote a book about it called Mara Leverett claimed that basically Mark Byers, who was Chris Byers' dad, one of the victims' fathers, had been speaking to Detective Glitchell. And then some of the information that the police had told him got leaked. So they said that Eccles might have, like, heard about the leaks. So although it wasn't published anywhere, it, like, got spread around the village or whatever.
Why would he confess if he's going to appeal?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and why would you admit to knowing details about the drowning and mutilation? The entire thing
Especially
is so
if
strange.
You have the opportunity to take, you know, to not speak.
Yeah. So some criticisms of, like, the police, basically. Yeah. The crime scene was handled badly, with the bodies being removed before the coroner arrived. And normally the coroner examines the scene to study rigor mortis.
Okay.
But they removed the bodies before he arrived. Mm. Or she. Might be she. And the coroner was phoned 2 hours after the shoe was discovered, so arrived late to the scene.
Great.
And the creek wasn't drained quickly enough, which led to loss of potential evidence.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What's clicking?
Yeah, I assumed that the creek was already drained, so you could see the boys, but they must... That guy must have seen the shoe floating on the top, and then they drained it and the bodies were at the bottom.
With the clothes? Or was it? Were they wrapped...
They were wrapped around sticks that were shoved in the mud.
Shoved in the mud. Oh, I don't know why. I thought that would be in there with it. Oh, okay. I was going to say, how would there be a hair on the on the trousers or whatever?
Yeah.
But if they're out, then that makes sense. Oh, yeah, that does make sense. Also, it's a bit better hiding as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't realise they had to drain the creek.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So the shoe must have floated up.
Yeah.
Here we go. A small amount of blood was found at the scene, but it was never tested.
What?
But there's been 3 HBO documentaries about it, and they've suggested that there was no blood at the crime scene.
Okay.
Therefore, so, like, when they were researching it, they said that there was no blood, therefore the murders were committed elsewhere.
Yeah, okay.
Mara Leverett speculated that the police force were overwhelmed because they'd never investigated anything of this scale, to be honest, most police departments. Mm. Probably haven't. And they refused help from the violent crimes expert at Arkansas State Police because the West Memphis Police Department, which is like who was dealing with the case, were being investigated by Arkansas State Police for suspected theft from the Crittenden County Drug Task Force. So maybe they refused help because they didn't want someone like closely being involved if they had stolen. Obviously, you don't want the people that are investigating you, like...
to have questionable morals, or...
or, like, just to be watching over you.
Oh, I see, like... oh, I thought it was them who stole, it's the other way around.
No, yeah, the smaller place.
Okay, got it, yeah.
So some physical evidence was stored in paper sacks, which were bought from a supermarket. So, could have been, like, contaminated with anything.
Yeah.
The juvenile probation officer at the scene said that, quote, "It looks like Damien Eccles finally killed someone," end quote.
What?
Yes.
So, before anything, they'd already decided.
Yeah.
That really, I don't know.
And as well, that's such like a weird state, I don't know.
But that really like links to them wanting to pin it on the certain people that before they even started, they knew who they wanted.
So there was an HBO documentary called Paradise Lost 2. And in this documentary, Brent Turvey, who was a forensic scientist and criminal profiler, claimed that there might be bite marks on the victims. And these were noticed in photographs years later. I know.
You can see it. But not in person, because they wouldn't have even been high quality photographs.
Exactly.
From the 80s. Okay.
And was inspected 4 years later by a board certified medical examiner. So it took, yeah, I know.
They could have had saliva DNA, couldn't they?
Yeah.
Oh no, not if they were underwater.
Yeah, true. I don't know the entire.
No, they can do. Can't they do matching your
bite mark? That's what they did with Ted Bundy. They
match your bite
that
mark
comes
to...
in late.
Okay, sorry.
The defence claimed it was not an adult bite mark, which I don't see why that's relevant, whilst the state claimed that no bite marks existed, which also seems weird. The state's experts examined the body for marks and conducted photo analysis when the bodies were first found, and it was concluded that if there were bite marks... they didn't match the three convicted.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, some new evidence. Christopher Byers, one of the victims, his adopted dad...
oh, is this where this comes back in?
Yes. Gave a folding Kershaw hunting knife to Doug Cooper, who was one of the cameramen for the HBO documentary Paradise Lost.
Okay.
Yeah. So, apparently the cameraman, Doug Cooper, then told the documentary makers on the 19th of December 1993. And then when they returned to New York, like the documentary makers, they discovered blood on the knife. So HBO ordered them to return it to West Memphis PD, where they received it on the 9th of January 1994.
Little bit weird.
Yeah. So John Byers, who was the adopted dad... that sounded weird, like the kid adopted him. Adoptive dad. Claimed he had never used this Kershaw hunting knife. Then, like, once he got told that there was blood on it.
Mm.
Once they found there was blood on it.
So, he bought it?
Yeah.
Specifically to give to them, or he just had it in his house?
No, he had it in his house.
Why did he give it to them? I'm so confused. Just because?
I guess maybe,
as
like...
a present?
No, I think it was like, oh, this... I have no idea. Maybe he was like, this could be evidence. You might want this in your documentary. But that's
so
weird.
I won't give it to police, but I'll give it to you for your documentary. Oh, and it might incriminate me.
Yeah, I don't know.
That is so weird.
I'm so confused. So he claimed it had never been used. Then once the blood was found, he claimed he had used it to cut deer meat.
Okay.
And they tested the blood, and it matched both John and Christopher.
What? what?
Yeah, and John claimed to have no idea of how that might happen. What a weird coincidence. And then he was interrogated, and the West Memphis Police Department suggested that he might have left the knife out accidentally, and then, like, either him or his son could have cut himself. And then he agreed to that and claimed he might have cut his thumb.
I don't buy it. Wouldn't have to be blade up.
Yeah.
But you've never used this you've used this hunting knife once.
Well, supposedly never, but then once.
But then once.
To cut deer meat, but then the blood doesn't match a deer, so.
But why would you have it out if you've used it once? And how could you accidentally skim? Why would it be face up for a start?
And knives aren't that sharp. Like, obviously it's a hunting knife, so it's sharp. But I've brushed past, like, knives before in my house. And unless it's a scalpel, you're probably not going to cut yourself. You have to put a bit of pressure on there.
But you're like, thumb as well. If it's, like, the bottom of your arm or something, you might brush past it. But your thumb, you'd... We're experimenting with how you would do this. I don't know. Don't buy it. But I guess it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah, but then it might be one of those things where, like, if he's innocent, it's awkward because it's, like, so weird that, like...
No, but if I came up to you and said...
Oh, I cut my thumb on this.
No, but he's saying he doesn't even notice. Oh, I cut the middle of my thumb.
Also, surely you would remember using a knife to cut deer meat. Maybe not. Maybe I'm...
No, maybe not. He might have had more than one. Yeah. If he is a hunter.
Yeah, true. Oh, this entire thing is so confusing.
Yeah.
So testing of the knife proved inconclusive because it was, like, such a small amount of blood. And...
I just wanted to say, if he'd said it before as well, it would seem a lot less weird. Yeah, exactly. If he didn't change the story so many times. Anyway, carry on.
And John and Christopher both had the same genotype. So it could have been either one of their bloods. Yeah. Which is annoying. And that's weird, because I was like, oh, that makes sense, because they're like father and son. They're not. It's his adoptive dad. What is the coincidence? Or what are the chances? What of the coincidence?
Actually, yeah, that's very weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, John undertook a polygraph test during Paradise Lost 2, which was the second documentary by HBO. Yeah. And he passed it. However, at the time, he was on psychoactive prescription medications, plural.
Okay.
Which apparently can affect results because it's, like, psychoactive, so it, like, numbs your brain activity. So as previously mentioned, the teeth marks did not match the three defendants. However, John Byers had his teeth removed in 1993.
Okay.
Which was
way. His teeth removed? All of them?
Which was... after the first trial, but before an imprint could be made of his teeth.
Colette, what the hell?
Yeah. So he claimed both... So, basically, it's really weird. So, to some people, he said that seizure medication had caused periodontal, like, problems. And I Googled what periodontal area around the teeth, like your gums... So he said to some people that his seizure medicine had caused damage, so he had his teeth removed. But then to other people, he said that he had planned to have them removed for years due to, like, a mixture of problems.
It could have been both things sort of going together, though.
I know, but still, that's convenient timing.
Oh, yeah, that's so... I just meant his excuse, I suppose, could be okay, but having them taken out... all of them removed.
Another serial killer did that, because I think it was, like, Richard Ramirez, because Ted Bundy got caught. So, I know.
This is post-Ted Bundy, right?
Yeah.
Was that 70s or something?
I think so. This is 93.
So. Yeah. So he would have this knowledge.
Yeah.
What the hell? I just don't... Why? That's so stupid.
Yeah. Autopsy photos were analysed by an expert who found a suspected belt buckle on Christopher Byers' corpse, leading John to reveal he had spanked his stepson before he disappeared. Which I would say is, like, something you might tell police.
Yeah, but then I suppose probably a fair few parents spanked their kids at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So wouldn't you tell... Why wouldn't you tell the police? If your son's just been found dead, you don't... I don't understand. It's so... slipped your mind that the last time you saw your son, you were hitting him with a belt buckle. I don't think that slips your mind.
Yeah, but you just might not want to unnecessarily incriminate yourself a child abuse.
But then it incriminates yourself. Oh, it's so weird. So, in October 2003, Vicky Hutcherson, who was the one with the son, revealed to the Arkansas Times that everything she had said was fabricated.
Sorry, and their conviction wasn't overturned?
It kind of. And she stated that police had implied that they were going to take her child if she didn't cooperate. So she said that when she walked into the police station, police officers were using pictures of Eccles, Baldwin and Miss Kelly as dart targets.
Okay.
And the audio tape police claimed was unintelligible, and which they lost, she said was actually clear and contained no incriminating evidence, which was the one where she put the hidden... stuff in her house.
So they're just working through an agenda.
Basically. So in 2007, DNA was tested, none of which matched the three suspects. However, and this is confusing, because there's a double negative, a hair found tied in the knots binding a victim, so like where they were hogtied, a hair in the knot was not inconsistent with Stevie Branch's stepfather, Terry Hobbs. Not inconsistent with.
Great.
Brilliant. So it's not consistent with, but it's also...
not inconsistent, yeah.
So Pamela Hobbs, which is Stevie's mum, said that Stevie loved his granddad's pocket knife, which she assumed that the murderer had taken, but she found it in... she found it in Terry's thing.
What? Things. Maybe.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
And she
said...
So it
was a stepfather conspiracy.
Yeah, I think so. So she said... So this is Stevie's mum. Said, quote, "He never told me that he had it." Even though she must have told him, oh, Stevie used to love his grandfather's
pocket knife. Well, not necessarily.
Yeah, but she might have said, oh, I think that the murderer took this pocket.
That would be speculation.
True.
Because she might have just thought it in her...
after this.
She might have just thought it in her head, though.
Yeah, true. But then Pamela's sister, so Stevie's auntie, said that she saw Terry, quote, "wash clothes, bed linens and curtains from Stevie's room at an off time around the time of the murders," end quote.
This is so suspicious.
I know.
We should reopen this case.
In July 2008, it was revealed that Ken Arnold, the jury foreman in the Eccles Baldwin trial, had discussed the case with an attorney before deliberations began. He was accused of advocating their guilt and sharing knowledge of inadmissible evidence, such as the Miss Kelly statement. He shared it with a jury, even though it was inadmissible.
So the whole jury, that is no.
Yes.
I thought, well, if the jury's bad, then... Not bad, but you know, if the jury hasn't acted properly, I thought it can get thrown out.
Yeah, this could lead to a reversal of convictions.
Oh, okay, there you go.
That wasn't discovered till 2008, to be fair. Miss Kelly's lawyer claimed in September 2008 that he heard the judge discuss taking a lunch break with the jury foreman, who said that the jury was almost finished deliberating. Apparently, the foreman then asked what would happen if the defendant was acquitted, and the judge left without answering.
Great.
So they're buddies. On September 10th, 2008, they were denied a retrial due to inconclusive... So they tried to get a retrial due to the Terry Hobbs DNA thing and his ex-wife's testimony, so Pamela Hobbs, Stevie's mum, along with expert testimony that the knife marks were in fact animals after the bodies were dumped. But they were denied this retrial because of this evidence.
But if the canal thing was full, how would the animals get to them?
Maybe I was wrong about the canal being full.
There's holes being poked
in them. I know, I've confused myself. But then why did they need to drain
the canal? If you can work it out, if you know,
tweet us,
yeah, please.
@coffee_crime.
We are confused. Clear it up for everyone.
In May 1994, convictions are appealed but upheld. June 1996, Miss Kelly's lawyer prepares an appeal to the US Supreme Court. In 2007, so a big jump, Eccles petitioned for a retrial due to a statute which permits a retrial due to new DNA testing, because obviously it's like developed over the years.
Mm.
So if there's DNA which could exonerate you, you can get it tested.
Okay.
But if your trial was like in the 80s and there was DNA on the crime scene but they couldn't test it at the time,
mm-hmm.
you can get a retrial and they can test it again.
Oh, okay, great.
Or like test it now. But the judge didn't allow this evidence into court for a reason that I don't understand. Yeah. In July 2007, the new forensic evidence came out. So the state and defense team said that, quote, some of the evidence cannot be attributed to either the victims or the defendants, end quote. On the 4th of November 2010, the Arkansas Supreme Court decision over the DNA evidence and supposed juror misconduct led to a plea bargain with the prosecutors. So on the 19th of August 2011, the West Memphis 3 enter Alford pleas, which I googled, is when you assert your innocence but acknowledge that there's enough evidence for a conviction, which seems like a weird plea, yeah. So you're saying that you didn't do it, but
there is evidence that you did.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. So they were released with 10-year suspended sentences after serving 18 years and 78 days. Yeah, which means if they reoffend, they can be sent back to prison for 21 years. Sorry. The prosecutor agreed to the plea deal because two of the victims' families were defending the West Memphis 3, so they believe they're innocent. Two out of the three families.
Yeah.
The mother of a witness who testified about Eccles' confession questioned her daughter's truthfulness.
Oh.
And the state crime lab employee who collected fibre evidence at Eccles and Baldwin's homes had died. But I don't see why, like, he still did the stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
That seems, I don't know. So part of the deal was the fact that they now cannot sue the state for wrongful imprisonment.
Seriously?
Yeah. Terry
That's
Hobbs.
A bit rubbish.
Yeah.
That's a bit mean to include, anyway.
But then I guess they were, one of them was on death row, so.
Still.
Terry Hobbs launched a defamation lawsuit against the pop group Dixie Chicks because they implied that he had killed his stepson. So we could be facing a fine defamation lawsuit.
Except our platform is not the same as the Dixie Chicks.
However, it was unsuccessful because the judge said that Terry had chosen to involve himself in public discussion. So, looks like we won't be being sued.
Shouldn't have killed your stepson if you didn't want to be prepared. Sorry. I sounded so slight.
Yeah, I know.
Shouldn't have killed your stepson then.
So, John Douglas, who do you recognise?
No, that was biased, by the way. Sorry about that. That just, the whole thing is just dodgy. Sorry.
Okay, John Douglas, do you remember who that is? My bae.
Oh, thingy writer.
Mindhunter.
Yeah.
He was
involved.
Well, he's not in Mindhunter. Yeah, I know. It's crazy. He is a criminal profiler, basically, who Mindhunter is based off of.
The book's He
wrote the book.
Yeah, exactly.
But not the TV show. So years later, he said that the victim, like, he did a, what's the word? Like a...
Don't know what you're saying.
A thing of when you profile. He profiled it.
Oh, great.
And said that the murders looked more like a single murderer who wanted to degrade and punish the victim, not a trio of unsophisticated teenagers.
Yeah.
He profiled him to have a violent history with a familiarity to the victims and locations, and he felt that it was a personal crime. Terry.
What about the others? The other guy, though, the teeth guy.
Yeah, that's the other stepdad. That seems more
dodgy. Yeah, but I'm just...
Yeah, I think that seems more dodgy. The West Memphis Three have not been exonerated, but they're all free. Therefore, technically, the crime is solved.
No, it's not solved, though. Oh, technically, the crime is solved, as in they are the answer.
Yeah, so that is...
I'm so biased now, Colette.
I know. That's the end.
That's a bit crazy. I feel kind of bad for them, to be honest.
Same. But then, it's
hard. I don't think it's them.
When I started researching, I was like, oh my god, it's definitely them. Like, why is there any debate? But then you start reading the other stuff, and then it's like...
all the stuff about how desperate the police seem. I think even
the fact that they were throwing darts at them. But then if the woman lied about the first confessions, what's to stop her lying?
But I know this sounds stupid. But, like, I think even if they did it, they shouldn't have been convicted of it because there was reasonable doubt and the jury was not.
I think what they should do, this is my
evidence that should have been included as well wasn't included.
So I think maybe they shouldn't. I think they should have been granted a retrial.
Yeah,
I think so, instead of instant release, because he's
retrial,
on. I think a retrial. Yeah. And as well, get all that DNA evidence tested. Surely they have records of what that guy's teeth were like?
Dental records. Yeah, they should have dental records if they were removed, shouldn't they?
Yeah.
Or he must have had an x-ray or something at some point. Or whatever you need, I don't know.
Yeah.
But surely that, like, some action should be brought against the police and or the judge who allowed
or the guy
the jury to be or the jury guy.
Yeah, the guy that lost all that blood evidence from Mr. Bojangles. Who never comes up in the rest of the entire
and they didn't,
thing.
They just decided that recording was not usable.
Yeah, also, I bet, like, Mr. Bojangles has never been identified. It would probably be fairly easy. He was in a Bojangles restaurant, which is a chain restaurant. They probably have CCTV cameras.
True. What about the blood, though?
Yeah.
If they'd have used that properly.
Yeah. Well, even if they identify him, at least they can question him. But then, based on John Douglas's, like, profile, it would make most sense for it to be the stepdad.
Why would the stepdads do it? I mean, it is kind of like a pattern that they're both stepdads.
Yeah, I know.
So they might have, one of them might have, like...
But then why would they kill the one that's not their child?
Because he was with them. If the three of them were out together and they want to kill this kid and they're playing, it's the best time to kill it.
Kill it?
Kill them. But there's another kid with them,
so... But why would they kill them?
Maybe one of them was talking about how they didn't like having a stepchild. And the other one was like, yeah, me too.
But then why would you adopt them?
To win over the wife.
I'm so confused.
I know, it's so weird.
Right.
Maybe the kids found out about the stepfather's doing something.
Yeah. But then why haven't the police found out about that then?
No, but... I have no solution.
I don't know. What the fuck?
Really weird. Also, let's take a moment. That is also really sad.
Yeah.
For those little boys.
I need to watch the West of Memphis. I think that'd be interesting.
Yeah, we should do that.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for listening.
Thanks for telling me about that. That was interesting. Oh, and next week will be mine again. And I think I know what I'm going to do.
Oh.
And it's, here's a big hint, it's not a murderer this time.
Yay!
It's a self-ass.
Finally, less depressing. No. I guess technically, yeah.
Everything has had some sort of murder in it. But this one is murder-free. So get excited. Hopefully.
Also,
I'll do that.
We might be releasing a bonus episode in the meantime.
Yeah. So look out for that.
Hopefully. Right. See you next week or in the meantime. Bye.
Bye.